Turn in your Bibles to Mark chapter 8. Mark chapter 8, verse 34. Y'all know what a selfie is? Young people, know what a selfie? I know that's a dumb question. I'm going to take a selfie of myself this morning with you guys because I'm important if you think about it. Look at all these people who've come to hear me preach. They come every week, right? And so, we got to take selfies of all these moments because it's not the moment that it's important, it's the self that's important, right? I mean, think about the word, just the word selfie. Self. We live in such a self-absorbed society, don't we? Burger King, have it your way. I like watching, we're doing some work at our house right now, and so we're kind of hooked on watching these shows on DIY Network and HGTV and all these house hunters, you know, these people, they're looking for a house. And so they want that. They have this list of things that have to be in this house for them to buy the house. And, we need this and we need this and all these, this list of things they need. And in reality, it's nothing but a grand list of, you know, dream wishes. We don't need many things that we have, but our society says you are really important. Sometimes I'm watching the news, like even CNN, and if you noticed, all these national shows will now report. They'll have these small segments where their viewers are emailing them or tweeting them. And so you have these viewer comments, and they'll show about three or four. You know, because every one of us, whatever we think is really important. I mean, you have Facebook, so you have all these friends on Facebook. Did you hear about the woman who was actually poisoning her son mildly? They would go to the doctor, she'd put it on Facebook. My son is so sick, we've had, you know, X number of times he's been in the hospital, and she's getting all this attention on Facebook. It's actually a psychological disorder, but it's this seeking attention for self. And of course, Twitter's a whole nother deal. With Twitter, you're a rock star. I mean, all these people are following you and your tweets and everything you put. All your posts are really important. Everything we think is important, and everything we want seems to be so important in our world. And there was some of that. There was an element of that in the first century. And in Mark chapter 8, it's interesting. Jesus, he's talking to the crowd and he's also talking to his disciples. Jesus, you have to understand, Jesus' disciples, you had all these people following Jesus. And they followed him not just because he taught as other teachers didn't teach, and not just because Jesus would associate with the lowly, you know, the tax collectors, the sinners, and that, and the people. That was really refreshing for them to have a spiritual leader associate with the lowly. But it wasn't just because of that. It was also because he healed. But it was really also because he was the Messiah. And the Jews knew a Messiah was coming. A great leader was coming to save the nation. But the Jews thought that the Messiah would be someone who would be like King David. I mean, their picture of the Messiah was he rides on in on this white horse and he rallies the nation and we're going to kick Rome out and we're going to be independent and it's going to be glorious. And that's what Jesus' disciples, even his apostles, that's what they thought things were going to be. And so in Mark chapter 8, verse 34, Jesus is explaining to them that that's not the way things are going to be, that his kingdom is not a physical kingdom like that, but it's a spiritual kingdom. And so in verse 34, Scripture says, "Then he called the crowd to him along with his disciples and said, 'If anyone would come after me, he must deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me.'" And I would have to expect that the vision they had for what the Messiah was going to be was not this. They thought as followers of Jesus that they would be important people in the kingdom. And they thought, as followers of Jesus, that we're going to mount a rebellion. And on their radar was nothing about denying self and taking up crosses, because crosses were brutal. Crosses were for suffering. We recently had, we've done some remodeling at home, and we needed to hire someone to come and do the mud and the tape and the texture. And so, I didn't know much about that. I just know that when guys do that, they do it quick. I mean, I know how skilled they are. And so I had a guy come and look over just a few things I needed. And in my mind, I'm preparing myself for the sticker shock. You know, he's going to tell me how much it's going to be, and I'm preparing myself. And I had $200, I'm thinking, I'm bracing myself, right? Because they're just going to come in, you know, slap some tape on and do their mud stuff and spray some stuff and wipe it down, and they're out. I mean, they're so fast. And he says $800. And on the outside, I'm okay, all right, no problem. And on the inside, I'm thinking, you know, trying to shake it off and, you know, excuse me, what was that? That was not what I was expecting. And Jesus' audience here, if they really understood him, I don't think this is what they were expecting. Are you truly following this verse? Deny yourself, take up your cross, follow Jesus. Because the only way that we are truly following this verse is if we are really working at it. To deny yourself daily, to choose what God wants instead of what I want, to take up my cross daily and be a servant of Jesus, whatever He wants, wherever He wants, let's be honest, that takes work. And if we're not really working at it, we're either not doing it, or we've worked at it so long it's habit. We had to bust up tile in our kitchen. And Ted loaned me these two tools, a handle with a blade at the bottom, and you slide that under the tile. I remember when we renovated the activity building. Some of y'all may remember doing that. And they had that old thin, flat tile, and it came up easy. And you could boom, 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 boom. You hit six or seven in a row, and that was fun. And I thought, this is going to be fun, you know. And so I took those tools, and he told me, you're going to need to rent a tool to remove this tile in your kitchen. Well, I removed a few in the entryway, and I got a good workout, and they came up fairly easily, you know, most of them in one piece. And I thought, this won't be bad. I'm going to go rent that thing at Home Depot and come home, and this is going to be fun. And so I'm there at Home Depot, and I'm looking at this. It's a jackhammer kind of apparatus. And the guys, you know, and there's another customer there, and he asked me what I'm doing, you know, what project or whatever. I said, I'm removing, tile in my kitchen. And he said, oh, you're going to have fun. And I'm thinking, what is he talking about? You know, I've already done some of it. It's not that big a deal. And I get that home, and it's a big deal. He was right. And it is a torture device. And I wore myself out. And I got all that up, and then I had to get all the stuff underneath it. And that was about as long and tedious and difficult of a process. And when I was finished, I know what that guy's talking about. If we really deny ourselves, take up our cross daily, and follow Christ, it's a job. It's not easy. It's not simple. It's not something we can casually do, because to deny self means I want this and I'm going to tell myself no. What you need to do is this over here, which is what you don't want to do. It's a statement. This statement, look at verse 35. Whoever wants to save his life will lose it. Whoever loses his life for me and for the gospel will save it. Now that's called a paradox. That's a statement that makes no sense. That's a statement that's the opposite of what actually makes sense. And Jesus says that. If you want to save your life, lose it. Throw it away. It's like Rick saying to his T-ball team, if you want to hit the ball, close your eyes. I mean, it's like a basketball coach saying, if you want to shoot the ball better, just use one hand. It doesn't make any sense at all. But if you remember, Jesus said in Matthew 6:33, seek first your own needs and wants and desires. Is that what Jesus said? But that's what our society says. You figure out what you want and you go get it. But Jesus said, seek first His kingdom, and all these things will be yours as well. Verse 36, what good is it for a man to gain the whole world yet forfeit his soul? Jesus has said, you have this statement here, gain the whole world. Okay? And so the reality is, Jesus is saying that people do, and we can, it's your choice if you want to seek the whole world. We can seek what we want. And we live in a world that does that. Jesus made the statement, whoever wants to save his life. And by that he means, if you want to go get whatever life has to offer for yourself, you can do that, but you'll lose your life. You'll lose your soul over it. And what good is it if a man gains the whole world? If we want to seek things for ourselves, if you want to seek to get rich for the sake of you, you can do that. And you'll probably achieve that. If you want to seek to get your way with people and with things, you can do that. You can get your way with people and with things. If you want to gain all this world has to offer, if you want to be entertained continually, you can do that. If you want to give your child everything their heart could possibly desire, you can do that. And we can gain the whole world, but we may lose our soul over it. Verse 37, Jesus says, what can a man give in exchange for his soul? We have a member who has three children, and children are grown now. But after, I believe it was after they were grown, there was a house fire. And the house burned, they lost everything, they lost all pictures that they had of the girl, you know, the children growing up and the family. If you think about how valuable, especially the older you get, pictures are and memories, and imagine losing all of those, what you would pay to have them back. What would we pay for certain things? If you've lost your health, and some of you are struggling in health, and some of our members have been healthy really not too long ago, but now really struggling, what would a person pay? What would a person give to have their health back? I know an occasion where a person lost a loved one, and the loved one passed away in the ICU, and they were with them, and the person had passed, and they were trying to wake them up, and you get in denial, and understandably so, get desperate. What we would give to have a loved one back. To help us think about things that are priceless. And now we're getting to priceless things. If that's what the price is for some of those things, what would we pay for our eternal soul? What would we give in exchange for our eternal soul? Because Jesus is saying, you can seek all these worldly things and gain them, but in the process, lose your soul. Because you haven't sought God first and foremost. You haven't denied yourself daily. Jesus says, if anyone's ashamed of me and my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, the Son of Man will be ashamed of him when he comes in his Father's glory with the holy angels. Jesus, he describes that generation. You know, we think about societies. And in the first century, Jesus describes that generation in, this is in Jerusalem or in Israel with the Jews, God's people. And he calls them adulterous. And he's not talking about unfaithfulness in a marriage. He's talking about the people being unfaithful to God. Adulterous and sinful. How would you describe our society? I mean, how would we describe the generation we live in? The world we live in? Part of surrendering to our loving Father is never being ashamed of being His. We surrender daily to God by never being ashamed. We're not ashamed to say, no, my kid won't play on Sunday because we're not going to miss church to play a game. Not being ashamed of Christ means saying, no, I do not believe that we evolved from monkeys. I believe we were created. I believe we were designed by a loving God. Not being ashamed of Christ means never being ashamed to say, I believe marriage is to be between a man and a woman. These are things that in our world, we're faced with situations where will we be ashamed or not? Will we shy away from standing with our God? So I want us to think about three reasons why surrender to God, why surrender to Christ. And the first one is when we surrender, ironically, we find rest. Jesus says in Matthew 11:28, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Weary and burdened. And I know some of us certainly today can relate to being weary and burdened. I mean, life is a struggle. And life may be difficult for you right now. And Jesus will give us rest. It's not so much physical rest, but it's rest from guilt. Because seeking all that this world has for us leads to a guilty conscience. And it leads to a conscience that's not at rest. And we all know what it's like to not be right with God. We all have sin in our history. And we know what it's like to not be at peace with God. And Jesus says, I will give you rest. Come to me. I am gentle. The yoke represents submission to the one we serve. And notice that Jesus says, take my yoke upon you. Because God never forces himself on us. It's our choice. When we surrender, number two, we also find contentment. And this is something Jesus said, come and learn from me. This is something that Paul learned. In Philippians 4:11, Paul says, I'm not saying this because I'm in need, for I've learned to be content whatever the circumstances. When we give up seeking everything we want and we surrender to Christ, we find that God gives us what we need. We find that I don't have to have all these things. There may be things that we do in our lives as hobbies or interests, job-wise, bettering yourself in your career. And so I'm not saying to have things is wrong or to have newer things. I'm not saying that. I'm saying where is our focus? Where is our love? Where is our heart? And if my focus is on all these worldly things, I will never have contentment. But Jesus says, come to me. Deny yourself, follow me, and God gives us contentment. Remember when Paul had the thorn in his flesh. If you have something in your life right now you wish God would just remove, maybe a person in your life. You know, God, I wish you would just change this one thing. If you'd change this one thing in my life, I would be okay. And Paul had one thing, and it was a thorn. We don't know what it was, but he prayed three times, begging God, remove this, please. And God said, no, because in your weakness, you're strong. And when Paul was weak, he turned to God, and God's grace was sufficient. Number three, when we surrender to Christ, we will find true happiness. Have you ever had someone say to you, I just want you to be happy? Or you may have said to someone else, I just want you to be happy. And usually, or a lot of times, that comes in the context of a person is faced with a decision. You know, I don't know what I should do. And I wanted to come and talk to you about it. And the person replies, well, I just want you to be happy. It's one of our most basic basic qualities of our nature is to be happy. We want to be happy, don't we? Raise your hand if you want to be happy. And if you don't, you're not listening. That's okay. Look around. We'll see who's not listening right now. We all want to be happy. But the happiness that Satan leads us to is a happiness that's based on greed. It's a happiness that's based, it's like those house hunter shows. It's a happiness that's based on, well, I have to have this, and I have to have this, and oh my goodness, look at what you've done with this, and now I'm so happy because I have everything I want. And that only lasts a while, and we find new things we want. But the happiness that God gives us comes from us losing. We lose to win. We lose ourselves. We deny ourselves. And there's true irony in that. This idea of losing to win. It's against our nature to say no to me so God can really give me what's better. It's against our nature. There was a time in my life when temporarily I was living in a family in church, their fifth wheel camper trailer. And I was living in it. Lived in about 6 months. And part of the agreement for me to live in it was, it was during the wintertime, and so they had a propane tank stood up about this high. So I would use that, and they had it filled to start with, and when it got low, then I would go pay to refill it and keep it filled and everything, and it would heat the fifth wheel. So it came time, it was starting to get low, and so it came time to unhook it from the fifth wheel. So I try to unhook it, and I get my pliers, and that's not working, and I get bigger pliers, and that's not coming loose. And I mean, you know, I don't want to go ask, hey, will you come unhook this thing? And so, I mean, I'm putting the torque on it. I'm working on this thing. And I wore myself out trying to get that thing unhooked. Some of you know why. Because the whole time I'm trying to unhook this thing, I'm tightening it. Because Lefty Lucy did not apply to that propane tank and how it's hooked up. Lefty Lucy let me down. And Jesus' instruction for us to lose in order to win. Lose your life daily and you'll win is against every part of our nature. Everything within us says, no, if I want to win, I got to get it. I got to seek it. I got to make it happen. I want, I want, I want. Self, self, self. I just wanted to remind us this morning that God teaches us to say no to self, yes to God. If we are denying ourselves daily, you'll know it. It'll be easy to know. And that is because you're really working at it. That's the only way it happens. This morning, there may be something on your heart that you want to share with us. Maybe that you want prayers for strength in your life. And it may be, I'm sure there's at least one here this morning who has never given their life to Christ and had their sins washed away. If there's something we can help you with, please come while we stand and sing.